And that is, officially, too fucking much. What he does next, he's sure he'll have no memory of doing. Simply a white noise gap of time that got him from point A to point B. He texts Cash, "What are you doing for the next 24 hours? Then he unearths the emergency credit card from his wallet and buys 2 plane tickets, first class, nonstop, boarding in 2 hours, Dulles International to Heathrow. Zara nearly refuses to secure a car after Alex had the goddamn nerve to call her from the runway at Dulles. It's dark and pissing down rain when they land in London, around 9 in the evening, and he and Cash are both soaked the second they climb out of the car inside the back gates of Kensington. Clearly, someone has radioed for Sean, because he's standing there at the door to Henry's apartments in an impeccable gray peacoat, dry and unmoved, under a black umbrella. "Mr. Clermont Diaz," he says, "what a treat." Alex has not got the damn time. "Move, Sean." "Mr. Bankston called ahead to warn me that you are on the way," he says. "As you might have guessed by the ease with which you were able to get through our gates, we thought it best to let you kick up a fuss somewhere more private." "Move." Sean smiles, looking as if he might be genuinely enjoying watching two hapless Americans become slowly waterlogged. "You're aware it's quite late, and it's well within my power to have security remove you. No member of the royal family has invited you into the palace." "Bullshit," Alex bites out. "I need to see Henry." "I'm afraid I can't do that. The prince does not wish to be disturbed." "God damn it. Henry!" He sidesteps Sean and starts shouting up at Henry's bedroom windows, where there's a light on. Fat raindrops are pelting his eyeballs. "Henry, you motherfucker!"
"Alex," says Cash's nervous voice behind him.
"Henry, you piece of shit! Get your ass down here!"
"You are making a scene," Sean says placidly.
"Yeah?" Alex says, still yelling. "How about I just keep yelling, and we see which of the papers shows up first?"
He turns back to the window and starts flailing his arms, too.
"Henry! Your royal fucking highness!"
Sean touches a finger to his earpiece.
"Team Bravo, we've got a
For Christ's sake, Alex. What are you doing?"
Alex freezes, his mouth open around another shout. And there's Henry standing behind Sean in the doorway, barefoot in worn-in sweats. Alex's heart is going to fall out of his ass. Henry looks unimpressed. He drops his arms.
"Tell him to let me in."
Henry sighs, pinching the bridge of his nose.
"It's fine. He can come in."
"Thank you," he says, pointedly looking at Sean, who does not seem to care at all if he dies of hypothermia.
He sloshes into the palace, ditching his soaked shoes as Cash and Sean disappear behind the door. Henry, who led the way in, hasn't even stopped to speak to him, and all Alex can do is follow him up the grand staircase toward his rooms.
"Really nice,"
Alex yells after him, dripping as aggressively as he can manage along the way. He hopes he ruins a rug.
"Fucking ghost me for a week, make me stand in the rain like a brown John Cusack, and now you won't even talk to me. I'm really just having a great time here. I can see why y'all had to marry your fucking cousins."
"I'd rather not do this where we might be overheard," Henry says, taking a left on the landing.
Alex stomps up after him, following him into his bedroom.
"Do what?"
he says, as Henry shuts the door behind them. "What are you going to do, Henry?" Henry turns to face him at last, and now that Alex's eyes aren't full of rainwater, he can see the skin under his eyes is papery and purple, rimmed pink at his eyelashes. There's a tense set to his shoulders Alex hasn't seen in months, not directed at him at least.
"I'm going to let you say what you need to say," Henry says flatly, "so you can leave."
Alex stares.
"What?
And then we're over?" Henry doesn't answer him. Something rises in Alex's throat. Anger, confusion, hurt, bile. Unforgivably, he feels like he might cry.
"Seriously?"
he says, helpless and indignant. He's still dripping.
"What the fuck is going on?"
A week ago it was emails about how much you missed me and meeting my fucking dad, and that's it? You thought you could fucking ghost me? I can't shut this off like you do, Henry.
Henry paces over to the elaborately carved fireplace across the room and leans on the mantelpiece.
You think I don't care as much as you?
You're sure as hell acting like it.
I honestly haven't got the time to explain to you all the ways you're wrong.
Jesus, would you stop being an obtuse fucking asshole for like 20 seconds?
So glad you flew here to insult me. I fucking love you. Okay?
Alex half yells, finally, irreversibly. Henry goes very still against the mantelpiece. Alex watches him swallow, watches the muscle that keeps twitching in his jaw, and feels like he might shake out of his skin.
Fuck, I swear. You don't make it fucking easy. But I'm in love with you.
A small click cuts the silence. Henry has taken his signet ring off and set it down on the mantel. He holds his naked hand on his chest, kneading the palm, the flickering light from the fire painting his face in dramatic shadows.
Do you have any idea what that means?
Of course I do, Alex. Please, Henry says. And when he finally turns to look at him, he looks wretched, miserable.
Don't. This is the entire goddamn reason. I can't do this. And you know why I can't do this. So please, don't make me say it.
Alex swallows hard.
You're not even going to try to be happy. For Christ's sake, Henry says. I've been trying to be happy my entire idiot life. My birthright is a country, not happiness.
Alex yanks the soggy note out of his pocket. I wish there weren't a wall. And throws it at Henry viciously. Watches him pick it up.
Then what is that supposed to mean? If you don't want this.
Henry stares down at his words from months ago.
Alex, Thisbe and Pyramus both die at the end.
Oh my God, Alex groans.
So what? Was this all never going to be anything real to you?
And Henry snaps.
You really are a complete idiot if you believe that,
Henry hisses, the note balled in his fist.
When have I ever, since the first instant I touched you, pretended to be anything less than in love with you? Are you so fucking self-absorbed as to think this is about you and whether or not I love you, rather than the fact I'm an heir to the fucking throne? You at least have the option to not choose a public life eventually, but I will live and die in these palaces and in this family. So don't you dare come to me and question if I love you when it's the thing that could bloody well ruin everything.
Alex doesn't speak, doesn't move, doesn't breathe, his feet rooted to the spot. Henry isn't looking at him, but staring at a point on the mantel somewhere, tugging at his own hair in exasperation.
It was never supposed to be an issue,
he goes on, his voice hoarse.
I thought I could have some part of you and just never say it, and you'd never have to know, and one day you'd get tired of me and leave, because I'm...
He stops short, and one shaking hand moves through the air in front of him in a helpless sort of gesture at everything about himself.
I never thought I'd be stood here, faced with a choice I can't make, because I never imagined you would love me back.
Well, Alex says,
I do. And you can choose. You know bloody well I can't. You can try,
Alex tells him, feeling as if it should be the simplest fucking truth in the world.
What do you want? I want you. Then fucking have me, but I don't want this.
Alex wants to grab Henry and shake him, wants to scream in his face, wants to smash every priceless antique in the room.
What does that even mean? I don't want it,
Henry practically shouts. His eyes are flashing, wet and angry and afraid.
Don't you bloody see? I'm not like you. I can't afford to be reckless. I don't have a family who will support me.
I don't go about shoving who I am in everyone's faces and dreaming about a career in fucking politics so I can be more scrutinized and picked apart by the entire godforsaken world. I can love you and want you and still not want that life. I'm allowed, all right. And it doesn't make me a liar. It makes me a man with some infinitesimal shred of self-preservation, unlike you. And you don't get to come here and call me a coward for it.
Alex takes a breath. I never said you were a coward.
Henry blinks. Well, the point stands. You think I want your life? You think I want Martha's? Gilded fucking cage? Barely allowed to speak in public or have a goddamn opinion? Then what are we even doing here? Why are we fighting, then, if the lives we have to lead are so incompatible? Because you don't want that either, Alex insists. You don't want any of this bullshit. You hate it.
Don't tell me what I want, Henry says. You haven't a clue how it feels.
Look, I might not be a fucking royal, Alex says, crosses the horrible rug, moves into Henry's space. But I know what it's like for your whole life to be determined by the family you were born into, okay? The lives we want, they're not that different. Not in the ways that matter. You want to take what you were given and leave the world better than you found it. So do I. We can figure out a way to do that. Together.
Henry stares at him silently, and Alex can see the scales balancing in his head.
I don't think I can.
Alex turns away from him, falling back on his heels like he's been slapped.
Fine, he finally says. You know what? Fucking fine. I'll leave.
Good.
I'll leave, he says, and he turns back and leans in. As soon as you tell me to leave.
Alex. He's in Henry's face now. If he's getting his heart broken tonight, he's sure as hell going to make Henry have the guts to do it right.
Tell me you're done with me. I'll get back on the plane. That's it. And you can live here in your tower and be miserable forever. Write a whole book of sad fucking poems about it, whatever. Just say it.
Fuck you, Henry says, his voice breaking. And he gets a handful of Alex's shirt collar, and Alex knows he's going to love this stubborn shithead forever.
Tell me, he says, a ghost of a smile around his lips. To leave.
He feels before he registers being shoved backward into a wall, and Henry's mouth is on his, desperate and wild. The faint taste of blood blooms on his tongue, and he smiles as he opens up to it. Pushes it into Henry's mouth, tugs at his hair with both hands. Henry groans, and Alex feels it in his spine. They grapple along the wall until Henry physically picks him up off the floor and staggers backward toward the bed. Alex bounces when his back hits the mattress, and Henry stands over him for several breaths, staring. Alex would give anything to know what's going through that fucking head of his. He realizes suddenly. Henry's crying. He swallows.
That's the thing. He doesn't know. He doesn't know if this is supposed to be some kind of consummation or if it's one last time. He doesn't think he could go through with it if he knew it was the latter. But he doesn't want to go home without having this.
Come here.
He fucks Henry slow and deep. And if it's the last time, they go down shivering and gasping and epic. All wet mouths and wet eyelashes, and Alex is a cliche on an ivory bedspread, and he hates himself, but he's so in love. He's in stupid, unbearable love, and Henry loves him too. And at least for one night, it matters, even if they both have to pretend to forget in the morning. Henry comes with his face turned into Alex's open palm. His bottom lip catching on the knob of his wrist, and Alex tries to memorize every detail down to how his lashes fan across his cheeks and the pink flush that spreads all the way up to his ears. He tells his too-fast brain,
Don't miss it this time. He's too important.
It's pitch black outside when Henry's body finally subsides, and the room is impossibly quiet. The fire gone out. Alex rolls over onto his side and touches two fingers to his chest, right next to where the key on the chain rests. His heart is beating the same as ever under his skin. He doesn't know how that can be true. It's a long stretch of silence before Henry shifts in the bed beside him and rolls onto his back, pulling a sheet over them. Alex reaches for something to say, but there's nothing. Alex wakes up alone. It takes a moment for everything to reorient around the fixed point in his chest where last night settled. The elaborate gilded headboard, the heavy embroidered duvet, the soft twill blanket beneath, that's the only thing in the room Henry actually chose. He slides his hand across the sheet, over to Henry's side of the bed. It's cool to the touch. Kensington Palace is gray and dull in the early morning. The clock on the mantelpiece says it's not even 7, and there's a violent rain lashing against the big picture window, half revealed by parted curtains. Henry's room has never felt much like Henry. But in the quiet of morning, he shows up in pieces. A pile of journals on the desk, the topmost splotched with ink from a pen exploding in his bag on a plane. An oversized cardigan, worn through and patched at the elbows, slung over an antique wingback chair near the window. David's leash hanging from the doorknob. And beside him, there's a copy of Le Monde, on the nightstand, tucked under a gigantic leather-bound volume of Wilde's complete works. He recognizes the date. Paris. The first time they woke up next to each other. He squeezes his eyes shut, feeling for once in his life that he should stop being so damn nosy. It's time, he realizes, to start accepting only what Henry can give him. The sheets smell like Henry. He knows, 1, Henry isn't here. 2, Henry never said yes to any kind of future last night. 3, this could very well be the last time he gets to inhale Henry's scent on anything. But 4, next to the clock on the mantel, Henry's ring still sits. The doorknob turns, and Alex opens his eyes to find Henry, holding 2 mugs and smiling a wan, unreadable smile. He's in soft sweats again, brushed with morning mist. "Your hair in the mornings is truly a wonder to behold," is how he breaks the silence. He crosses and kneels on the edge of the mattress, offering Alex a mug. It's coffee, 1 sugar, cinnamon. He doesn't want to feel anything about Henry knowing how he likes his coffee. Not when he's about to be dumped. But he does. Except when Henry looks at him again, watches him take the first blessed sip of coffee, the smile comes back in earnest. He reaches down and palms one of Alex's feet through the duvet. "Hi," Alex says carefully, squinting over his coffee. "You seem less pissy." Henry huffs a laugh. "You're one to talk. I wasn't the one who stormed the palace in a fit of pique to call me an obtuse fucking asshole." "In my defense," Alex says, "you were an obtuse fucking asshole." Henry pauses, takes a sip of his tea, and places it on the nightstand. "I was," he agrees, and he leans forward and presses his mouth to Alex's, one hand steadying his mug so it doesn't spill. He tastes like toothpaste and Earl Grey, and maybe Alex isn't getting dumped after all. "Hey," he says when Henry pulls back. "Where were you?" Henry doesn't answer, and Alex watches him kick his wet sneakers onto the floor before climbing up to sit between Alex's open legs. He places his hands on Alex's thighs, bracketing him with his full attention. And when he looks up into Alex's eyes, his are clear blue and focused. "I needed a run," he says, "to clear my head a bit, figure out what's next.
Very Mr. Darcy brooding at Pemberley. And I ran into Philip. I hadn't mentioned it, but he and Martha are here for the week while they're doing renovations on Anmer Hall. He was up early for some appearance or other, eating toast. Plain toast. Have you ever seen someone eat toast without anything on it? Harrowing, truly. Alex chews his lip. Where's this going, babe? We chatted for a bit. He didn't seem to know about your visitation last night, thankfully. But he was on about Martha and landholdings and the hypothetical heirs they have to start working on, even though Philip hates children, and suddenly it was as if everything you said last night came back to me. I thought, God, that's it, isn't it? Just following the plan. And it's not that he's unhappy, he's fine. It's all very deeply fine. A whole lifetime of fine. He's been pulling at a thread on the duvet, but he looks back up, squarely into Alex's eyes, and says, That's not good enough for me. There's a desperate stutter in Alex's heartbeat. It's not? He reaches up and touches a thumb to Alex's cheekbone. I'm not good at saying these things like you are, but I've always thought, ever since I knew about me, and even before, when I could sense I was different, and after everything in the past few years, all the mad things my head does, I've always thought of myself as a problem that deserved to stay hidden. Never quite trusted myself or what I wanted. Before you, I was all right letting everything happen to me. I honestly have never thought I deserved to choose. His hand moves, fingertips brushing a curl behind Alex's ear. But you treat me like I do. There's something painfully hard in Alex's throat, but he pushes past it. He reaches over and sets his mug down next to Henry's on the nightstand. You do, he says. I think I'm actually beginning to believe that, Henry says. And I don't know how long it would have taken if I didn't have you to believe for me. And there's nothing wrong with you, Alex tells him. I mean, aside from the fact that you're occasionally an obtuse fucking asshole. Henry laughs again, wetly, his eyes crinkling up in the corners, and Alex feels his heart lift into his throat, up to the embellished ceilings, pushing out to fill the whole room all the way to the glinting gold ring still sitting above the fireplace. I'm sorry about that, Henry says. I wasn't ready to hear it. That night at the lake, it was the first time I let myself think you might actually say it. I panicked, and it was daft and unfair, and I won't do it again. You better not, Alex tells him. So you're saying you're in? I'm saying, Henry begins, and the knit of his brow is nervous, but his mouth keeps speaking. I'm terrified. And my whole life is completely mad. But trying to give you up this week nearly killed me. And when I woke up this morning and looked at you, there's no trying to get by for me anymore. I don't know if I'll ever be allowed to tell the world, but I want to. One day, if there's any legacy for me on this bloody earth, I want it to be true. So I can offer you all of me, in whatever way you'll have me, and I can offer you the chance of a life. If you can wait, I want you to help me try. Alex looks at him, taking in the whole parcel of him, the centuries of royal blood sitting under an antique Kensington chandelier, and he reaches out to touch his face and looks at his fingers and thinks about holding the Bible at his mother's inauguration with the same hand. It hits him fully. The weight of this. How completely neither of them will ever be able to undo it. Okay, he says. I'm into making history. Henry rolls his eyes and seals it with a smiling kiss, and they fall back into the pillows together. Henry's wet hair and sweatpants and Alex's naked limbs all tangled up in the lavish bedclothes. When Alex was a kid, before anyone knew his name, he dreamed of love like it was a fairy tale.
as if it would come sweeping into his life on the back of a dragon one day. When he got older, he learned about love as a strange thing that could fall apart no matter how badly you wanted it. A choice you make anyway. He never imagined it'd turn out he was right both times. Henry's hands on him are unhurried and soft, and they make out lazily for hours or days, basking in the rare luxury of it. They take breaks to finish their lukewarm coffee and tea, and Henry has scones and blackcurrant jam sent up. They waste away the morning in bed, watching Mel and Sue squawk over tea cakes on Henry's laptop, listening to the rain slow to a drizzle. At some point, Alex disentangles his jeans from the foot of the bed and fishes out his phone. He's got 3 missed calls from Zara, 1 ominous voicemail from his mother, and 47 unread messages in his group text with June and Nora.
Alex, Z just told me you're in London?
Alex, oh my God. I swear to God, if you do something stupid and get yourself caught, I'm gonna kill you myself.
But you went after him?
That's so Jane Austen. I'm gonna punch you in the face when you get back. I can't believe you didn't tell me. How did it go?
Are you with Henry now?
Gonna punch you. It turns out 46 out of 47 texts are June, and the 47th is Nora asking if either of them know where she left her white Chuck Taylors. Alex texts back, "Your Chucks are under my bed," and Henry says hi. The message has barely delivered before his phone erupts with a call from June, who demands to be put on the speaker and told everything. After, rather than facing Zara's wrath himself, he convinces Henry to call Sean.
"Do you think you could, phone Ms. Bankston and let her know Alex is safe and with me?"
"Yes, sir," Sean says, "and shall I arrange a car for his departure?"
Henry says, and he looks at Alex and mouths,
"Stay?"
Alex nods. "Tomorrow?" There's a very long pause over the line before Sean says,
"I'll let her know,"
in a voice like he'd rather do literally anything else. Alex laughs as Henry hangs up, but he returns to his phone again, to the voicemail waiting from his mother. Henry sees his thumb hovering over the play button and nudges his ribs.
"I suppose we do have to face the consequences at some point," he says.
Alex sighs.
"I don't think I told you, but she, well, when she fired me, she told me that if I wasn't 1,000% serious about you, I needed to break things off."
Henry nuzzles his nose behind Alex's ear.
1,000%?
"Yeah, don't let it go to your head." Henry elbows him again, and Alex laughs and grabs his head and aggressively kisses his cheek, smashing his face into the pillow. When Alex finally relents, Henry is pink-faced and mussed and definitely pleased.
"I was thinking about that, though," Henry says. "The chance being with me is going to keep ruining your career."
"Congress by 30, wasn't it?"
"Come on, look at this face. People love this face. I'll figure out the rest." Henry looks deeply skeptical, and Alex sighs again.
"Look, I don't know. I don't even exactly know, like, how being a legislator would work if I'm with a prince of another country. So, you know, there's stuff to figure out.
But way worse people with way bigger problems than me get elected all the time." Henry's looking at him in the piercing way he has sometimes that makes Alex feel like a bug stuck under a shadow box with a pushpin.
"You're really not frightened of what might happen?"
"No, I mean, of course I am," he says. "It definitely stays secret until after the election. And I know it'll be messy, but if we can get ahead of the narrative, wait for the right time and do it on our own terms, I think it could be okay."
"How long have you been thinking about this?"
"Consciously? Since, like, the DNC.
Subconsciously, in total denial?
A long-ass time. At least since you kissed me."
Henry stares at him from the pillow.
"That's kind of incredible."
"What about you?"
"What about me?" Henry says.
"Christ, Alex. The whole bloody time."
"The whole time? Since the Olympics."
"The Olympics?" Alex yanks Henry's pillow out from under him. "But that's, That's like...
Yes, Alex, the day we met. Nothing gets past you, does it? Henry says, reaching to steal the pillow back.
What about you? He says, as if he doesn't know.
Shut your mouth, Alex says, grinning like an idiot. And he stops fighting Henry for the pillow and instead straddles him and kisses him into the mattress. He pulls the blankets up and they disappear into the pile, a laughing mess of mouths and hands, until Henry rolls onto his phone and his ass presses the button on the voicemail.
Diaz, you insane, hopeless, romantic little shit, says the voice of the President of the United States, muffled in the bed. It had better be forever. Be safe.
Sneaking out of the palace without security at 2 a.m. was, surprisingly, Henry's idea. He pulled hoodies and hats out for both of them, the incognito uniform of the internationally recognizable, and B staged a noisy exit from the opposite end of the palace where they sprinted through the gardens. Now they're on the deserted, wet pavement of South Kensington, flanked by tall, red brick buildings and a sign for...
Stop, are you kidding me?
Alex says, Prince Consort Road. Oh my God, take a picture of me with a sign.
Not there yet, Henry says over his shoulder.
He gives Alex's arm another pull to keep him running.
Keep moving, you wastrel.
They cross to another street and duck into an alcove between two pillars while Henry fishes a keyring with dozens of keys out of his hoodie.
Funny thing about being a prince, people will give you keys to just about anything if you ask nicely.
Alex gawks, watching Henry feel around the edge of a seemingly plain wall.
All this time I thought I was the Ferris Bueller of this relationship.
What, did you think I was Sloane? Henry says, pushing the panel open a crack and yanking Alex into a wide, dark plaza. The grounds are sloping, white tiles carrying the sounds of their feet as they run. Sturdy Victorian bricks tower into the night, framing the courtyard, and Alex thinks,
Oh, the Victoria and Albert Museum. Henry has a key to the V&A.
There's a stout old security guard waiting at the doors.
Can't thank you enough, Gavin, Henry says,
and Alex notices the thick wad of cash Henry slips into their handshake.
Renaissance City tonight, yeah?
Gavin says.
If you would be so kind, Henry tells him.
And they're off again, hustling through rooms of Chinese art and French sculptures. Henry moves fluidly from room to room, past a black stone sculpture of a seated Buddha and John the Baptist, nude and in bronze, without a single false step.
You do this a lot?
Henry laughs.
It's, sort of my little secret. When I was young, my mum and dad would take us early in the morning, before opening. They wanted us to have a sense of the arts, I suppose, but mostly history.
He slows and points to a massive piece. A wooden tiger mauling a man dressed as a European soldier, the sign declaring, Tipu's Tiger.
Mum would take us to look at this one and whisper to me, See how the great tiger is eating him up? That's because my great-great-great-great-granddad stole this from India. I think we should give it back, but your grand says no.
Alex watches as Henry's face in quarter profile, the slight pain that moves under his skin. But he shakes it off quickly and takes Alex's hand back up. They're running again.
Now I like to come at night, he says. A few of the higher-up security guards know me. Sometimes I think I keep coming because, no matter how many places I've been, or people I've met, or books I've read, this place is proof I'll never learn it all. It's like Westminster. You can look at every individual carving or pane of stained glass and know there's this wealth of stories there. That everything was put in a specific place for a reason. Everything has a meaning, an intention. There are pieces in here. The Great Bed of Ware. It's mentioned in Twelfth Night, Epicene, Don Juan, and it's here. Everything is a story, never finished. Isn't it incredible? And the archives, God, I could spend hours in the archives. They...
He's cut off mid-sentence because Alex has stopped in the middle of the corridor and yanked him backward into a kiss.
Hello, Henry says when they break apart. What was that for?
I just like, Alex shrugs,
really love you.
The corridor dumps them out into a cavernous atrium, rooms sprawling out in each direction. Only some of the overhead lighting has been left on, and Alex can see an enormous chandelier looming high in the rotunda,
tendrils and bubbles of glass in blues and greens and yellows. Behind it, there's an elaborate iron choir screen standing broad and gorgeous on the landing above.
"This is it,"
Henry says, pulling Alex by the hand to the left, where light spills out of an immense archway. "I called ahead to Gavin to make sure they left a light on. It's my favorite room." Alex has personally helped with exhibitions at the Smithsonian and sleeps in a room once occupied by Ulysses S. Grant's father-in-law, but he still loses his breath when Henry pulls him through the marble pillars. In the half-light, the room is alive. The vaulted roof seems to stretch up forever into the inky London sky, and beneath it, the room is arranged like a city square somewhere in Florence, climbing columns and towering altars and archways. Deep basins of fountains are planted in the floor between statues on heavy pedestals, and effigies lie behind black doorways with the resurrection carved into their slate. Dominating the entire back wall is a colossal, Gothic choir screen carved from marble and adorned with ornate statues of saints, black and gold and imposing. Holy. When Henry speaks again, it's soft, as if he's trying not to break the spell.
"In here, at night, it's almost like walking through a real piazza," Henry says. "But there's nobody else around to touch you or gawk at you or try to steal a photo of you. You can just be."
Alex looks over to find Henry's expression careful, waiting, and he realizes this is the same as when Alex took Henry to the lake house, the most sacred place he has. He squeezes Henry's hand and says, "Tell me everything." Henry does, leading him around to each piece in turn. There's a life-size sculpture of Zephyr, the Greek god of the west wind brought to life by Francavilla, a crown on his head and one foot on a cloud, Narcissus on his knees, mesmerized by his own reflection in the pool, one thought to be Michelangelo's lost Cupid, but actually carved by Cioli.
"Do you see here, where they had to repair his knuckles with stucco?"
Pluto stealing Proserpina away to the underworld, and Jason with his golden fleece. They wind up back at the first statue, Samson slaying a Philistine, the one that knocked the wind out of Alex when they walked in. He's never seen anything like it. The smooth muscles, the indentations of flesh, the breathing, bleeding life of it, all carved by Giambologna out of marble. If he could touch it, he swears the skin would be warm.
"It's a bit ironic, you know," Henry says, gazing up at it. "Me, the cursed gay heir, standing here in Victoria's museum, considering how much she loved those sodomy laws."
He smirks. "Actually, you remember how I told you about the gay king, James I?
The one with the dumb jock boyfriend?"
"Yes, that one." "Well, his most beloved favorite was a man named George Villiers, the handsomest bodied man in all of England, they called him. James was completely besotted. Everyone knew. This French poet, de Vieux, wrote a poem about it." He clears his throat and starts to recite. "One man fucks Monsieur Le Grand, another fucks the Comte de Tonnerre, and it is well known that the King of England fucks the Duke of Buckingham." Alex must be staring, because he adds, "Well, it rhymes in French. Anyway, did you know the reason the King James translation of the Bible exists is because the Church of England was so displeased with James for flaunting his relationship with Villiers that he had the translation commissioned to appease them?"
"You're kidding."
"He stood in front of the Privy Council and said, 'Christ had John, and I have George.'"
"Jesus?"
"Precisely." Henry's still looking up at the statue, but Alex can't stop looking at him and the sly smile on his face, lost in his own thoughts. "And James's son, Charles I, is the reason we have dear Samson. It's the only Giambologna that ever left Florence. He was a gift to Charles from the King of Spain, and Charles gave it, this massive, absolutely priceless masterpiece of a sculpture, to Villiers. And a few centuries later, here he is. One of the most beautiful pieces we own. And we didn't even steal it. We only needed Villiers and his trolloping ways with the queer monarchs. To me,
If there were a registry of national gay landmarks in Britain, Samson would be on it.
Henry's beaming like a proud parent, like Samson is his, and Alex is hit with a wave of pride and kind. He takes his phone out and lines up a shot.
Henry standing there all soft and rumpled and smiling next to one of the most exquisite works of art in the world.
What are you doing?
I'm taking a picture of a national gay landmark, Alex tells him, and also a statue.
Henry laughs indulgently, and Alex closes the space between them, takes Henry's baseball cap off, and stands on his toes to kiss the ridge of his brow.
It's funny, Henry says. I always thought of the whole thing as the most unforgivable thing about me.
But you act like it's one of the best.
Oh, yeah, Alex says. The top list of reasons to love you goes brain, then dick, then imminent status as a revolutionary gay icon.
You are quite literally Queen Victoria's worst nightmare.
And that's why you love me.
My God, you're right.
All this time, I was just after the bloke who'd most infuriate my homophobic forebears.
Ah, and we can't forget they were also racist.
Certainly not, Henry nods seriously.
Next time, we shall visit some of the George III pieces and see if they burst into flame.
Through the marble choir screen at the back of the room is a second, deeper chamber, this one filled with church relics. Past stained glass and statues of saints, at the very end of the room, is an entire high altar chapel removed from its church. The sign explains its original setting was the apse of the convent church of Santa Chiara in Florence in the 15th century, and it's stunning, set deep into an alcove to create a real chapel, with statues of Santa Chiara and St. Francis of Assisi.
When I was younger, Henry says, I had this very elaborate idea of taking somebody I loved here and standing inside the chapel, and he'd love it as much as I did, and we'd slow dance right in front of the Blessed Mother. Just a daft, pubescent fantasy.
Henry hesitates before finally sliding his phone out of his pocket. He presses a few buttons and extends a hand to Alex. And quietly, your song starts to play from the tiny speaker.
Alex exhales a laugh.
Aren't you going to ask if I know how to waltz?
No waltzing, Henry says. Never cared for it.
Alex takes his hand, and Henry turns to face the chapel like a nervous postulant, his cheeks hollowed out in the low light, before pulling Alex into it. When they kiss, Alex can hear a half-remembered old proverb from Catechism, mixed up between translations of the book.
Come, hijo mío. De la miel, porque es buena, and the honeycomb, sweet to thy taste.
He wonders what Santa Chiara would think of them, a lost David and Jonathan, turning slowly on the spot. He brings Henry's hand to his mouth and kisses the little knob of his knuckle, the skin over the blue vein there, bloodlines, pulses, the old blood kept in perpetuity within these walls, and he thinks,
Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.
Henry charters a private plane to get him back home, and Alex is dreading the dressing down he's going to get the minute he's stateside, but he's trying not to think about it. At the airstrip, the wind whipping his hair across his forehead, Henry fishes inside his jacket for something.
Listen, he says, pulling a curled fist out of his pocket.
He takes one of Alex's hands and turns it to press something small and heavy into his palm.
I want you to know, I'm sure, 1,000%.
He removes his hand, and there, sitting in the center of Alex's calloused palm, is the signet ring.
What?
Alex's eyes flash up to search Henry's face and find him smiling softly.
I can't keep it, Henry tells him. I'm sick of wearing it.
It's a private airstrip, but it's still risky, so he folds Henry in a hug and whispers fiercely,
I completely fucking love you.
At cruising altitude, he takes the chain off his neck and slides the ring on next to the old house key. They clink together gently as he tucks them both under his shirt. Two homes, side by side.
Chapter 11. Subject: Hometown Stuff. From A. AGCD at eclair45.com, September 2nd, 2020, 5:12 p.m. To Henry. H. Have been home for 3 hours. Already miss you. This is some bullshit. Hey, have I told you lately that you're brave? I still remember what you said to that little girl in the hospital about Luke Skywalker. He's proof that it doesn't matter where you come from or who your family is. Sweetheart, you're proof too. By the way, in this relationship, I am absolutely the Han, and you are absolutely the Leia. Don't try to argue because you'll be wrong. I was also thinking about Texas again, which I guess I do a lot when I'm stressed about election stuff. There's so much stuff I haven't shown you yet. We haven't even done Austin. I want to take you to Franklin Barbecue. You have to wait in line for hours, but that's part of the experience. I really want to see a member of the royal family wait in line for hours to eat cow parts. Have you thought any more about what you said before I left? About coming out to your family? Obviously, you're not obligated. You just seemed kind of hopeful when you talked about it. I'll be over here, still quarantined in the White House. At least Mom didn't kill me for London. Rooting for you. Love you. Kisses and hugs. A. P.S. Vita Sackville West to Virginia Woolf, 1927. With me, it is quite stark. I miss you even more than I could have believed, and I was prepared to miss you a good deal. Subject: Hometown Stuff. From Henry, H. Wales at kensingtonemail.com, September 3rd, 2020, 2:49 a.m., 2 a. Alex: It is indeed bullshit. It's all I can do not to pack a bag and be gone forever. Perhaps I could live in your room like a recluse. You could have food sent up for me, and I'll be lurking in disguise in a shadowy corner when you answer the door. It'll all be very dreadfully Jane Eyre. The Mail will write mad speculations about where I've gone, if I've offed myself or vanished to St. Kilda. But only you and I will know that I'm just sprawled in your bed, reading books and feeding myself profiteroles and making love to you endlessly until we both expire in a haze of chocolate sauce. It's how I'd want to go. I'm afraid, though, I'm stuck here. Gran keeps asking Mum when I'm going to enlist, and did I know Philip had already served a year by the time he was my age? I do need to figure out what I'm going to do, because I'm certainly closing in on the end of what's an acceptable amount of time for a gap year. Please do keep me in your... What is it American politicians say? Thoughts and prayers. Austin sounds brilliant. Maybe in a few months, after things settle down a bit. I could take a long weekend. Can we visit your mum's house? Your room? Do you still have your lacrosse trophies? Tell me you still have posters up. Let me guess. Han Solo, Barack Obama, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I'll agree with your assessment that you're the Han to my Leia, in that you are, without doubt, a scruffy-looking nerf herder who would pilot us into an asteroid field. I happen to like nice men. I have thought more about coming out to my family, which is part of why I'm staying here for now. B has offered to be there when I tell Philip if I want, so I think I will. Again, thoughts and prayers. I love you terribly. And I want you back here soon. I need your help picking a new bed for my room. I've decided to get rid of that gold monstrosity. Yours, Henry. P.S. From Radcliffe Hall to Yevgenia Solin, 1934. Darling, I wonder if you realize how much I am counting on your coming to England, how much it means to me. It means all the world, and indeed my body shall be all yours, as yours will be all mine, beloved. And nothing will matter but just we two longing loves, at last come together. Subject: Hometown Stuff. From A. AGCD at eclair45.com, September 3rd, 2020, 6:20 a.m. To Henry. H.
Shit.
Do you think you're going to enlist? I haven't done any research on it yet. I'm going to ask Zara to have one of our people put together a binder on it.
What would that mean?
Would you have to be gone a lot? Would it be dangerous? Or is it just like, wear the uniform and sit at a desk? How did we not talk about this when I was there?
Sorry. I'm packing.
I somehow forgot this was a thing looming on the horizon. I'm there for whatever you decide you want to do. Just like, let me know if I need to start practicing gazing wistfully out the window, waiting for my love to return from the war. It drives me nuts, sometimes, that you don't get to have more say in your life. When I picture you happy, I see you with your own apartment somewhere outside of the palace, and a desk where you can write anthologies of queer history. And I'm there, using up your shampoo and making you come to the grocery store with me, and waking up in the same damn time zone with you every morning. When the election is over, we can figure out what we'll do next. I would love to be in the same place for a bit, but I know you have to do what you have to do. Just know, I believe in you. Re. Telling Philip sounds like a great plan. If all else fails, just do what I did and act like a huge jackass until most of your family figures it out on their own. Love you. Tell B hi. A. P.S. Eleanor Roosevelt to Lorena Hickok, 1933. I miss you greatly, dear. The nicest time of the day is when I write to you. You have a stormier time than I do, but I miss you as much, I think. Please keep most of your heart in Washington as long as I'm here, for most of mine is with you. Subject, re, hometown stuff, from Henry, hwales@kensingtonemail.com, September 4, 2020, 7:58 p.m., 2A. Alex, have you ever had something go so horribly, horribly, unbelievably badly that you'd like to be loaded into a cannon and jettisoned into the merciless black maw of outer space? I wonder sometimes what is the point of me, or anything. I should have just packed a bag, like I said. I could be in your bed, languishing away until I perish, fat and sexually conquered, snuffed out in the spring of my youth. Here lies Prince Henry of Wales. He died as he lived, avoiding plans and sucking cock. I told Philip. Not about you, precisely. About me. Specifically, we were discussing enlistment, Philip and Sean and I told Philip I'd rather not follow the traditional path, and that I hardly think I'd be useful to anyone in the military. He asked why I was so intent on disrespecting the traditions of the men of this family, and I truly think I dissociated straight, ha, out of the conversation, because I opened my blasted mouth and said, because I'm not like the rest of the men of this family, beginning with the fact that I am very deeply gay, Philip. Once Sean managed to dislodge him from the chandelier, Philip had quite a few words for me, some of which were confused or misguided, and ensuring the perpetuity of the bloodline, and respecting the legacy. Honestly, I don't recall much of it. Essentially, I gathered that he was not surprised to discover I am not the heterosexual heir I'm supposed to be, but rather surprised that I do not intend to keep pretending to be the heterosexual heir I'm supposed to be. So, yes, I know we discussed and hoped that coming out to my family would be a good first step. I cannot say this was an encouraging sign, re our odds of going public. I don't know. I've eaten a tremendous amount of Jaffa cakes about it, to be frank. Sometimes I imagine moving to New York to take over launching Pez's youth shelter there. Just leaving, not coming back, maybe burning something down on the way out. It would be nice. Here's an idea. Do you know I've realized I've never actually told you what I thought the first time we met? You see, for me, memories are difficult. Very often, they hurt. A curious thing about grief is the way it takes your entire life, all those foundational years that made you who you are, and makes them so painful to look back upon because of the absence there, that suddenly they're inaccessible. You must invent an entirely new system. I started to think of myself and my life and my whole lifetime worth of memories as all the dark, dusty rooms of Buckingham Palace. I took the night B left rehab, and I begged her to take it seriously.
and I put it in a room with pink peonies on the wallpaper and a golden harp in the center of the floor. I took my first time with one of my brother's mates from uni when I was 17, and I found the smallest, most cramped little broom cupboard I could muster, and I shoved it in. I took my father's last night, the way his face went slack, the smell of his hands, the fever, the waiting and waiting and terrible waiting, and the even worse, not waiting anymore. And I found the biggest room, a ballroom, wide open and dark, windows drawn and covered. Locked the doors. But the first time I saw you, Rio, I took that down to the gardens. I pressed it into the leaves of a silver maple and recited it to the Waterloo vase. It didn't fit in any rooms. You were talking with Nora and June, happy and animated and fully alive, a person living in dimensions I couldn't access, and so beautiful. Your hair was longer then. You weren't even a president's son yet, but you weren't afraid. You had a yellow Ipe Amarelo in your pocket. I thought, this is the most incredible thing I have ever seen, and I had better keep it a safe distance away from me. I thought, if someone like that ever loved me, it would set me on fire. And then I was a careless fool, and I fell in love with you anyway. When you rang me at truly shocking hours of the night, I loved you. When you kissed me in disgusting public toilets and pouted in hotel bars and made me happy in ways in which it had never even occurred to me that a mangled-up, locked-up person like me could be happy. I loved you. And then, inexplicably, you had the absolute audacity to love me back. Can you believe it? Sometimes, even now, I still can't. I'm sorry things didn't go better with Philip. I wish I could send hope. Yours, Henry. P.S. From Michelangelo to Tommaso Cavalieri, 1533. I know well that, at this hour, I could as easily forget your name as the food by which I live. Nay, it were easier to forget the food, which only nourishes my body miserably, than your name, which nourishes both body and soul, filling the one and the other with such sweetness that neither weariness nor fear of death is felt by me while memory preserves you to my mind. Think, if the eyes could also enjoy their portion, in what condition I should find myself. Subject. Hometown Stuff. From A. AGCD at eclair45.com. September 4th, 2020. 8:31 p.m. To Henry. H. Fuck. I'm so sorry. I don't know what else to say. I'm so sorry. June and Nora send their love. Not as much love as me, obviously. Please don't worry about me. We'll figure it out. It just might take time. I've been working on patience. I've picked up all kinds of things from you. God, what can I possibly write to make this better? Here. I can't decide if your emails make me miss you more or less. Sometimes I feel like a funny-looking rock in the middle of the most beautiful clear ocean when I read the kinds of things you write to me. You love so much bigger than yourself, bigger than everything. I can't believe how lucky I am to even witness it, to be the one who gets to have it, and so much of it is beyond luck and feels like fate. Catholic God made me to be the person you write those things about. I'll say 5 Hail Marys. Muchas gracias, Santa Maria. I can't match you for prose, but what I can do is write you a list. An incomplete list. Things I love about H.R.H. Prince Henry of Wales. 1. The sound of your laugh when I piss you off. 2. The way you smell underneath your fancy cologne, like clean linens but somehow also fresh grass. What kind of magic is this? 3. That thing you do where you stick out your chin to try to look tough. 4. How your hands look when you play piano. 5.
All the things I understand about myself now because of you. 6. How you think Return of the Jedi is the best Star Wars. Wrong, because deep down you're a gigantic, sappy, embarrassing romantic who just wants the happily ever after. 7. Your ability to recite Keats. 8. Your ability to recite Bernadette's Don't Let It Drag You Down monologue from Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. 9. How hard you try. 10. How hard you've always tried. 11. How determined you are to keep trying. 12. That when your shoulders cover mine, nothing else in the entire stupid world matters. 13. The goddamn issue of Le Monde you brought back to London with you and kept and have on your nightstand. Yes, I saw it. 14. The way you look when you first wake up. 15. Your shoulder-to-waist ratio. 16. Your huge, generous, ridiculous, indestructible heart. 17. Your equally huge dick. 18. The face you just made when you read that last one. 19. The way you look when you first wake up. I know I already said this, but I really, really love it. 20. The fact that you loved me all along. I was thinking about the last one ever since you told me, and what an idiot I was. It's so hard for me to get out of my own head sometimes. But now I'm coming back to what I said to you the night in my room when it all started, and how I brushed you off when you offered to let me go after the DNC. How I used to try to act like it was nothing sometimes. I didn't even know what you were offering to do to yourself. God, I want to fight everyone who's ever hurt you. But it was me, too, wasn't it? All that time. I'm so sorry. Please stay gorgeous and strong and unbelievable. I miss you, I miss you, I miss you, I love you. I'm calling you as soon as I send this, but I know you like to have these things written down. A. P.S. Richard Wagner to Eliza Villa, re Ludwig II, 1864. Remember when you played Wagner for me? He's an asshole, but this is something. It is true that I love my young king who genuinely adores me. You cannot form an idea of our relations. I recall one of the dreams of my youth. I once dreamed that Shakespeare was alive, that I really saw and spoke to him. I can never forget the impression that dream made on me. Then I would have wished to see Beethoven, though he was already dead. Something of the same kind must pass in the mind of this lovable man when he sees me. He says he can hardly believe that he really possesses me. None can read without astonishment, without enchantment, the letters he writes to me. Chapter 12. There's a diamond ring on Zara's finger when she shows up with her coffee thermos and a thick stack of files. They're in June's room, scarfing down breakfast before Zara and June leave for a rally in Pittsburgh, and June drops her waffle on the bedspread. Oh my God, Z, what is that? Did you get engaged? Zara looks down at the ring and shrugs. I had the weekend off. June gapes at her. When are you going to tell us who you're dating? Alex asks. Also, how? Nope, she says. You don't get to say shit to me about secret relationships in and around this campaign, princess. Point, Alex concedes. She brushes past the topic as June starts wiping syrup off the bed with her pajama pants. We've got a lot of ground to cover this morning, so focus up, little Claremonts. She's got detailed agendas for each of them, bullet-pointed and double-sided, and she dives right in. They're already on Thursday's voter registration drive in Cedar Rapids. Alex is pointedly not invited when her phone pings with a notification. She picks it up, scrolling through the screen offhandedly. So, I need both of you to be dressed and ready by... She looks more closely at the screen, distracted. Her face is taken over with a horrified gasp. Oh, fuck my ass. What? Alex starts, but his own phone buzzes in his lap.
and he looks down to find a push notification from CNN. Leaked surveillance footage shows Prince Henry at DNC Hotel.
Oh, shit, Alex says.
June reads over his shoulder. Somehow, some anonymous source got the security camera footage from the lobby of the Beekman that night of the DNC. It's not explicitly damning, but it very clearly does show the two of them walking out of the bar together, shoulder to shoulder, flanked by Cash, and it cuts to footage from the elevator, Henry's arm around Alex's waist while they talk with Cash. It ends with the three of them getting off together at the top floor.
Zara looks up at him, practically murderous.
Can you explain to me why this one day of our lives will not stop haunting me?
I don't know, Alex says miserably. I can't believe this is the one that's... I mean, we've done riskier things than this.
That's supposed to make me feel better, how?
I just mean, like, who is leaking fucking elevator tapes? Who's checking for that? It's not like Solange was in there.
A chirp from June's phone interrupts him, and she swears when she looks at it.
Jesus, that Post reporter just texted to ask for a comment on the speculation surrounding your relationship with Henry and whether it has to do with you leaving the campaign after the DNC.
She looks between Alex and Zara, eyes wide.
This is really bad, isn't it?
It ain't great, Zara says. She's got her nose buried in the phone, furiously typing out what are probably very strong-worded emails to the press team.
What we need is a fucking diversion. We have to send you on a date or something.
What if we,
June attempts.
Oh, fuck, send him on a date, Zara says. Send you both on dates.
I could,
June tries again.
Who the fuck do I call?
What girl is going to want to wade into this shitstorm to fake date either of you at this point?
Zara grinds the heels of both hands against her eyes.
Jeez,